Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is off limits as host Sophia Franklin dishes on her personal life, like toxic relationships, dating and hookups, and dealing with insecurities. All with humor and real talk. Find Sophia with an F on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for the hard-hitting analysis you won't find anywhere else.
Here's former Super Bowl winning scout Brian Broaddus
and Bobby Belt.
10-5 victory! Cowboys win!
This is Love of the Star.
Welcome to the Love of the Star podcast. I'm Bobby Belt, Dallas Cowboys insider for 105 through the Fan at Dallas. Joined as always by former NFL scout Brian Broaddus, the Super Bowl winner. He is now the co-host of the G-Bag Nation right behind me there, 2 to 7 p.m. Central, Monday through Friday on 105 through the Fan in Dallas. He's also the pre- and post-game co-host on the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. And he is, as we were just talking about before we got going, he is 30 players deep. He's almost got a full first round worth of names for the NFL draft that he's knocked out. I know he's got some fresh Alabama offense tape he's going to be able to take in.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're getting all set up. But, Brian, we can't look too far ahead to the draft because the Dallas Cowboys are on a winning streak. Even one can be a streak to me. I'm going to take it as a positive. Dallas does win this game against Washington. First off, Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent, Bobby. If I don't get the opportunity to tell you, I know you and I will see each other a bunch, but happy holidays. If
yes,
I don't
to
get to
well.
Say it at the end, you know, we all work on Thanksgiving. That's kind of our things we're thankful for. And so I'm thankful I get to work on Thanksgiving, but, it's always good to work with guys like yourself and excited to kind of talk about this game, believe it or not.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I'm excited to work with you as well. And happy Thanksgiving and happy holidays and, Merry Christmas season, everything else to everybody out there, all of our listeners out there. Yeah. And you know, I got to throw
happy
a shout
Hanukkah
out
and all that stuff.
Yeah. All of it. We're working on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I've got to throw a special shout out to somebody that I know listens, because his birthday is going to be on Thanksgiving. This is also me giving you a tip, a reminder to tell him, Chris Wells, the AT&T Stadium elevator operator who stands outside the press box. His birthday is Thursday. Big listener to the Fan, big listener to Love the Star. So
good
I might
dude.
Be
really
spoiling
good
it a little bit. Yeah. So Chris Wells' birthday is on Thursday. So a happy birthday to a loyal listener as well.
He makes sure we get to the field in a timely manner.
He does.
I appreciate that.
Yep. He is clutch. Him and his brother Rusty are two great guys. Love
good
them
dudes.
Both.
All
right, so let's talk about this victory that the Cowboys were able to secure over Washington. This is kind of a tight week, one of these weird weeks where you get you're just kind of decompressing from the last game. You're already like, oh, I got to start studying on the Giants now and looking ahead. But let's take a look at just the Washington game really quickly. You know, Brian, before we get into the specifics of the game, I made this point on the radio this week that I'm going to be in favor of storylines. I'm going to be in favor of what's best for the Cowboys. And what's best for the Cowboys, I think, is to get as high a draft pick as possible because I don't think they're a playoff team.
Sure.
With that said, I will say we got into the Washington locker room after that game, and the first player I saw walking in who was talking to somebody was Luke Schoonmaker. And Luke Schoonmaker, who has spent 2 years getting dumped on by everybody, who had a touchdown in this game, and I think has played better the last few weeks from where he's been. He stepped up, and he's done some good for you. In fact, here's your wild stat of the day, Brian. In the Cowboys' last 19 regular season games, Luke Schoonmaker has double the touchdowns that Jake Ferguson does. But when you look at Luke Schoonmaker, who looks genuinely excited to have something like that happen. Josh Butler at his locker, Kevontae Turpin. Like, you see these young competitive players and you see them just excited that something good happened to them after it's been a 6-week stretch of a lot of bad. It does make you kind of reflect. I was standing in their locker and I was reflecting a little bit and I was going, I want them to have a better pick because I don't think this is a team that's going anywhere. But I can't be angry seeing these young players feel like something good happened to us and we're not going to apologize for something good happening to us. So I did have a little self-reflective moment where I had to check that at the door and say, all right, these guys, they worked hard in this game. They've played hard and they haven't, you know, necessarily quit or hung their head throughout this entire thing. So I'm not totally going to complain about the fact that maybe you lost some draft position, because I think for those guys, just as somebody who wants to see good things for good people and to see people who are working hard, see them have some success and feel the fruits of their labor, I did think it was nice to step into that locker room and see some genuine joy from a lot of players who have had their heads, you know, down a little bit and been really frustrated in recent weeks.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I know from my own personal experience that in working in that building and then also working at Valley Ranch, it's difficult. I mean, you put everything you have into that for the season, and it, on a weekly basis, you know, you do everything you can, whether it's scouting players, writing reports, anything you have to do to try and help the team get a victory. And it is a miserable feeling to, you know, when you lose a game, because you hear about it. You hear about it from your fan base. You hear about it from the media. You know, it's one of the rare jobs that people have that, you know, maybe the, you know, government officials and stuff like that get criticized for stuff that happens, but it's tough. I felt for all the people that worked at the Star, because it's not a fun place to work when you're losing football games. And it's not because of Jerry Jones and all that, but it is miserable. You feel like you've given everything you can to this, and when it doesn't work out, it's a sick feeling. And they, the old George Allen, I said this today on the break with, you know, my guys over there at DallasCowboys.com. You know, George Allen used to say, when you lose a game, it's like a little bit of you die inside, a little bit of you just dies. And, you know, and again, in the football sense, not a, you know, or in the sports sense, not you're just dying, but, you know, it losing is very, very hard, and it's very hard on your emotional state. It's not an easy job when you're losing. Trust me, you mentioned about me in Super Bowls and playoff wins, NFC championship games, all this. I've seen, like, I've been to the top of the mountain on these things. I've also been in the very, very lowest valley. I've been where whale shit is, you know, at the bottom of the bottom of the ocean.
Yep.
You know, I've been that low, you know, because of 5-11 seasons, and you feel like you let your friends down, the city down, the fans down. You feel like you let everybody down. Those people for a little bit of time, and now it's a quick turnaround, but those people over there get to breathe a little bit. They get to walk into the building and have a smile on their face and feel a little bit good. That plane flight home, which you were on, you understand that. You see that, you know. And I think that's where, yeah, does it cost you draft positions? Sure, it absolutely does. But you can't ask these players and coaches to tank games. You can't do it. As a fan base, you want the best pick. At the end of the day, they want the best pick. You know, this team is, you know, it struggles. It struggles naturally. It doesn't need to tank. It won a game against, I feel like, a pretty good team. You know, the Commanders are fighting for a playoff spot. They're fighting for the division win. You know, we interviewed their play-by-play guy, and I can't, it was like 5-6 times that Eric Chiafalo and I were talking to him, and he kept saying, bounce back game, you know, get right game. This is going to be a get right game. If they can't run the ball, this is a get right game. Kept saying that, you know, and as, you know, our end of it, you had to sit there and take it, you know, you had to take it because, you know, there were a lot of things that are really not good with this football team. And there's still a lot of things that aren't good with this football team, you know, but for one weekend, they put this thing together, and, you know, they could very well put it together again against the Giants.
Sure.
You know, and we'll see what happens against Cincinnati the following week. but that's kind of where you're at right now. You lost a bunch of games early, you know, that look really bad now. The Saints game looks really bad right now. You know, the Atlanta game, I don't trust Atlanta. You know, that looks like a bad loss right now. You know, I mean, there were some games that you probably should have won and you just did not get it done. So you're in the situation you are right now. But my point of the whole thing is those people in that building over there, they're alive again. They're alive. And then there'll be a loss and then they'll lose a part of it. They'll be dead again, you know. But I think that this team is, you know, don't worry about where the draft position is going to be. You know, you're going to naturally play these games. And right now, without your quarterback, you're likely going to lose a few more of them and you'll be where you need to be. And you just go and pick players from there.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. Now, let's talk about the actual takeaways from the game. Brian, just really quickly, I guess some of the aspects of it that really stood out to you as positive or players that stood out for you as positive. I know you and I talked about this, you know, on Monday morning, just kind of catching up on the phone, that this felt in a lot of ways like it was the best coaching job your staff has done all year.
No question.
In terms of Mike McCarthy with a lot of depleted personnel coming out there with a game plan that could move the ball pretty efficiently, and not have to put the ball in jeopardy and ask too much from your guys. And then Mike Zimmer, who I think did a great job confusing Jaden Daniels and kind of forcing him to, we talked about it, when he starts running, he's not looking to make a play down the field. He's looking to run because he's decided play's gone, I'm running. They did a really good job forcing him to make that decision quickly. And then at that point, keeping him contained. He did not abuse you necessarily for a lot. But, you know, great job from the coaching staff. What are some of the big takeaways for you coming out of this game?
Yeah, if I could just identify one coach, I feel like I've been very, very critical of Mike Solari. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I want to give him credit. I want to give, you know, Hoffman, Bass, Steele, Beebe, the rotation that they were working at left tackle. I want to give those guys some credit. I kind of felt like that the Commanders front seven, if you look at Frankie Louvu, you know, and the players that the Commanders have in that front seven, you know, I kind of feel like that's a pretty decent group. And sure, Dallas did a good job in protection. They did a good enough job running the ball, the toss sweep stuff. And there's, you know, we've been very, very, very critical of that crew. And, you know, for one weekend, they really did pull it together, much like they did for the Pittsburgh game. They pulled it together, you know, and that was a gutty, gritty win. The Pittsburgh game was, this was a gutty, gritty win as well. You know, it kind of fell apart at the end. They rallied back. But like I said, I want to give Mike Solari some credit, because I think you have to be fair in this business. I've been very critical of him, but they pulled it together very nicely in that win.
Yeah, I thought Bass was fantastic. I thought that the interior of the offensive line worked really well together. Hoffman likes to mix it up. I'm sure you saw on tape.
He's got a little chippiness to his game.
I don't know how much it was evident on the broadcast. I felt like I was talking to Derek Eagleton in the press box during that game, and I was like, I think you could have flagged him for unsportsmanlike conduct or something else about 12 times.
Sure.
And they were letting him chip back and forth a little bit. Even there was one time, I think it was the Louvu one, where he remained on the field for a while, where McCarthy looked a little bit like, dude, you got to get off the field. We got to punt. You need to move. And so, but Brock Hoffman, chippiness, attitude, played well though. I thought played better looking at back on tape than I thought he did live. But yeah, the interior of the offensive line, really strong. I want to ask you about something. One of the evolutions we've seen, I think Mike Zimmer's done a lot of really creative things since the bye week in terms of with his defensive fronts, some of the stuff he's doing pre-snap, the different alignments he's using. And one of the evolutions we've seen is, I would guess, just watching tape the last 2 weeks, we've seen Micah Parsons at a true three technique.
How about that?
More in 2 weeks than I think he played his entire career combined before this.
Yeah.
That's something that I think Mike Zimmer deserves a lot of credit for. It looked like he went into the bye week, did a lot of self-scouting, and said, okay, I've learned about my players for the first 8 weeks. My personnel's depleted. What can I do to make this as good as I can. And to his credit, I think a defense that seems to be buying in right now, even when the execution's not always there, they seem to be buying in. Micah Parsons, I would have expected them to butt heads at some point. Micah Parsons seems to really respect Mike Zimmer.
I think
and
he does.
And has bought in to a great extent. So, but I thought that was fascinating. The way he's using, you know, Parsons, the way he's lining up some different things. I remember there was one play specifically. I don't know if you'll remember it, Brian. I think it was a second down. And they're showing, you know, Jaden Daniels is trying to ID which blitzers are coming. And his hot, he thinks Jordan Lewis is coming because Israel McQuam is up there. And Jordan Lewis does come. But his hot is there in the slot. And Eric Kendricks at the snap of the ball, he's on the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
He moves all the way over and immediately just gives Daniels this hesitation where Kendricks is praying he throws that ball so that he can just step in and pick it off. Instead, Daniels has to kind of hesitate. Pressure starts coming quick, and he's got a break, and it ends with a 1 yard sack or something like that. But I think that kind of stuff that Mike Zimmer's doing is fantastic.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think another thing, if you remember the interception that they had with Golston, they're going to run a twist stunt with Golston and Mozzie Smith. And what happens is they've got Overshown playing as an off-ball linebacker to the side of the twist, which would be the defense's right side. And right before the snap, Overshown goes from off-ball linebacker to edge on the outside running off the twist. So what happens is you're getting Mozzie's going up to like the B gap. You're getting Golston is trying to – Golston can't get home on the twist. He gets kind of muddied in there. But then you got Overshown screaming off the backside, hustling down Daniels, and it kind of forces him to throw the ball a little bit faster than he wants to throw it. And what happens is that Golston, being a heady football player, kind of sees what's going on with the screen to Robinson. He's kind of works his way over there. Ball bounces up, boom, it's in his lap, and now he's off and running. So, you know, it was a pre-snap look of, okay, off-ball linebacker Overshown. Mike is using Overshown as like a poor man's Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
He's getting pressures. He can get sacks. He can run down guys. He's very effective in the way he plays. And you mentioned those things. He's moving Micah plays the three technique. How many times have you and I done a show this year where we break down the opponent's offense and we talk about, oh, well, how about this guard? Attack this guy. It appears that Mike Zimmer has kind of figured out that, okay, let me try and win Micah Parsons versus Nick Allegretti. Let's see if Tyler Biadasz could get over fast enough to pick up this one technique or pick up this three technique.
Right. You know,
they took advantage of some of the things that, and they're going to do the same thing against the Giants. You know, the Giants are probably going to try and run the ball, but I guarantee you, this is going to be a Malik Nabers. You know, you thought he had 15 targets the first time they played. This thing could be 25 targets if he plays, especially if Drew Locke plays. And by the way, talking to some people at the Giants, they are thinking that maybe they're going to have both quarterbacks ready in this game. And so that's kind of where, but, you know, the Giants offensive line, you know, they struggle. They're a big group. They struggle with, you know, with movement. So the Cowboys, what the Cowboys been doing, a lot of movement up front, twist game, blitz game, double A gap blitz game, off the, you know, corner blitz, slot blitz. You know, there's a lot of things that Mike Zimmer's trying to do. You make these guys have to throw the ball in this game, it could be a little bit of a difficult situation because the Giants don't protect particularly well. They run the ball. Tracy runs the ball well. Don't get me wrong about that. Tracy's a good back. But, you know, if you make them have to throw the football, then it's going to be a little bit of a different story for them. They've given up a lot of sacks. They've given up a lot of pressures, and a lot of it has to do with the offensive line. So that's kind of where, but that plays into the Mike Zimmer things that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I just one more note on the Washington game before we, dive headlong into the Giants here. I thought a guy who played really well when I went back and watched the tape was Jordan Lewis. And
he always plays well. He's one of your better defensive players.
You know who I've started to compare him to a little bit? It's the guy that I've got on Cowboys Crosstalk on Wednesday night coming up here. And that's Datwin. Like, he's one of these guys who's just, you know, is ultimate team player, constantly told throughout his career about being an undersized guy.
Yeah. Oh, no. And Parcells hated the man.
And before you know it, you blink and you look up and you're like, he's been here for 8 years and he's consistent and he's a leader. And I mean, obviously two different personalities, Datwin and Jordan Lewis. Jordan Lewis, much edgier. Datwin, you know, all American good guy. Like, not that Jordan Lewis isn't, but Jordan Lewis has some piss and vinegar to him. But I do think that's who, I think when we look back on Jordan Lewis's career, people are going to remember it like a Datwin type of career at corner, because he's so good. And I thought he was fantastic in this game. Maybe needed a little more depth on the McLaurin bomb, maybe. But I mean, overall, I'm not gonna bitch too much about the way Jordan Lewis played.
Yeah, next gen pinned that one on him too. My man had four targets at him, and like at 103 yards, 87 of it came on one play.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that shows you. I'll say this about Jordan Lewis: I haven't seen Jordan Lewis play outside corner, and it feels like forever.
Yeah.
And what did he do? Probably 5, 6, 7 snaps. They were trying to rotate things at the cornerback spot. He was having to play, you know, McQuamu was having to play. Bland was having to play. They were rotating guys over there. That was just kind of like what they were doing at left tackle. They were rotating guys to try and get through Bland, you know, get Bland through that game. And they did a really great job. But I mean, Jordan Lewis carrying Terry McLaurin down the sidelines, you know, staying in coverage and all that, staying connected. I can't remember the last time Jordan Lewis played outside.
Yeah.
But here he goes, you know, lines up at depth, turns, runs, goes, you know, just his. You know, it's going to be sad if this happens. There are several players that, if you look at overthecap.com and go look at the Cowboys free agents, Jordan Lewis is one of the guys that's on that list.
Yeah.
Him, Golston, Oso Digizua. Get ready, folks, for the second wave of depth to go walking out of this building.
Yeah,
it's unless they can sign back. I'd love for them to be able to sign back Jordan Lewis. But Jordan Lewis, if you watch him play in a year of stink on defense at times, Jordan Lewis is the one guy that has not stunk. He's been the guy that's been consistent throughout. He's got an edge to him. He's willing tackler. He'll play the ball. He's tough. He doesn't take any crap from anybody. After the game in the locker room, when it's not good, he tells you what it is.
Yep.
You know, we got to win, man. We just got to win. We got to find a way to win a game, you know, and that's the kind of the attitude. But I think I'm going to be a little sad when you see potentially a Jordan Lewis walking out, because I think if I'm a pro personnel director, which I was at one time in my life, I'm watching Dallas's tape on defense. I'm looking at Osa and those guys, all these guys in Golston. And every time I look up, number two's doing something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, what are we doing at nickel? What do we got at nickel here? What do we, you know, Jordan Lewis is playing at a very, very high level right now.
You are listening to the Love the Star podcast. The Love the Star is an Odyssey podcast. You can find it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Brian, let's jump into these New York Giants, which again, it's such a tight turnaround, and
yeah,
there's so much that's different about this Giants.
That's why they make them divisional games. That's why they make these things divisional games.
Yeah. Yes. And by the way, this is a Cowboys team where if you win this game, you're now 3-1 in the division. You know, as nuts as this season is, you're 3-1 in the division. You're 4-2 on the road. You've got like a really good road record. You just can't win a single game at home. But this game is going to, I still feel like even though it's a different team, obviously it's a different quarterback right now. I don't feel like they're doing, you remember we talked about this back in September, that as good as Malik Nabers is, I felt like Brian Daboll and the Giants, they did a good job of trying to scheme open easy looks for him, get him on the move, get the ball in his hands. That does look like it's shifted a little bit. And I don't know if it's because of the quarterback play or whatever else. I don't see as much of that right now. And I understand Malik Nabers' frustration that he's been expressing in recent weeks. They've obviously had the big quarterback change. They've had injuries along the offensive line. They just shut down Azeez Ojulari on the defensive side. He's going on IR. So it's different in a lot of ways, but I think it's still your typical headline. Vulnerabilities in the secondary. It's a really strong pass rush. They've got guys who can get to the passer there. Yeah. It's a bad run defense. It's an offensive line you can take advantage of. You got to account for Malik Nabers. Tyrone Tracy can hurt you. It's still a lot of the same sort of things that we were looking at back in September, I feel like.
Yeah, I think to me, you know, what's interesting is I was kind of watching Nabers play. And, you know, I have a history with him because of LSU. But, you know, I could sense his frustration. He even had his frustration after the game. The quarterback situation has not been great. You know, Daniel Jones, you go back, you watch. I took all the the one thing with the next gen stuff that I'm able to get that I could break down all the sacks. Give me all the sacks. And you could see that, you know, Daniel Jones had problems. They give up a lot of pressure. They give up sacks. The quarterbacks hold the ball. You know, there's a lot of things that go into why they haven't been able to get Nabers the ball. Nabers dealt with some injury too. You remember after the Dallas game that he took a, you know, he took a tumble on the sidelines there. Him and Diggs got tied up. They're trying to fit in the ball. His face hit directly into the ground.
Yep.
You know, and he was dealing with a concussion. You know, now he's dealing with a little bit of a groin injury and stuff like that. But the one thing you got to know about Nabers is that he is going to run the majority of his snaps on the outside. He's going to be wide a lot of these times. And he'll also play in the slot a little bit, but not as much as he's going to play wide. So you think about, oh, kind of moving him around and stuff. He's going to play wide. And what's funny about him, though, all three of his touchdowns this year have come from him being on the left side of the formation, which is the right side of the Dallas defense. Now, usually you get right side of the defense, right side corner is Diggs, right? Yeah. Left side corner is Bland. So we'll see how that all plays out if they try and get Nabers on Bland or they keep him on Diggs. Another thing that's kind of interesting about this cat is of his 67 receptions, and he's run 319 routes. I was just looking up all these numbers on him. 319 routes, 67 receptions, 3 touchdowns. A Giants quarterback has not thrown an interception when targeting him with the ball.
Mm.
So you're not going to get as much as they throw the ball to him.
High volume.
It's the other ones that are going to potentially make the mistakes. You know, and maybe the quarterback overthrows or, you know, you have some kind of situation where, but they have not in 319 routes that he's run this year. They have not thrown an interception his way since he's been targeted. So that itself tells you a lot about him. But what I was watching, I'm saying, okay, what are his routes? The hitch, the go, the out, they throw a lot of goes to this guy. They're like 50% on the go route with this guy. But he's got the hitch, the go, the out, the slant, and the cross. And it's funny, the club has attempted, and I looked this up, the club's attempted 18 go routes, but they've only connected on 4 of them with this guy. So they're going to try to get the ball.
If Daniel Jones could hit a deep ball early in the season, his career might be different. His career in New York might be different, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they're going to get this guy the football. He's got the ability to be a special player. And Tracy, the running back, he's another one. It doesn't matter where you hand him the ball. You know, we go through these things each week, Bobby, you and I talk about Joe Mixon outside left, you know, Saquon Barkley inside right. You know, you just where these runners have the most success.
Yeah.
Tracy's one of those guys where it doesn't matter. I mean,
balanced.
It's really, really balanced. Where he has scored all of his touchdowns is off the left side, whether it's left outside or left inside. That's Dallas's right side. So he's got 3 touchdowns. But what's funny about him too is when he's had to deal with what we call that stack box, and you've heard the term with me, I always like to say, well, how are they defending the run against these guys? Are they playing light box, 6 or less, neutral box, 7 or more, or stack box, 8 or more? he's averaging over 4 yards a carry against stack box.
Yeah.
And five of his 10 yard runs, five of his explosive runs have come against stack box. That four of the 18 opportunities he's had against stack box, he's had a 10 plus yard run. So he's averaging over 4 yards a carry against stack box. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are running backs in this league that don't average 4 yards a carry against a neutral or light box.
Right.
And here's this guy running the ball with eight or more defenders down there, and he's averaging 4.1 yards a carry. Plus, he's ripping off some 10 plus yard runs.
Yeah. So no, and a former
that's
receiver.
What you're doing. Yeah, that's what you're dealing with right there. You know, yeah. They've got a couple of players that you really have to kind of deal with here. Neighbors and then also Tracy are two of the better ones.
Yeah, and I think when you look at things defensively,
yeah,
their strength is clearly the way that they can get after the quarterback with some of these guys
that they have
on that side of the ball. And look, the Giants still like to bring, you know, corners up. They'll send nickel blitzes and they'll do some different things with their safety. So they're not afraid to blitz some of their third level defenders to try and generate even more pressure. So I asked John Schmelk from Giants.com. He was with us on the Fan, a friend of yours. I had asked him, you know, what does this look like? If they win this game, if the Giants win, what are you saying? You know, what do you think you're going to be saying at the end of the game? Is, well, this is what happened. And for me, the way that I look at it is if the Giants win this game, I think we're talking about they were blowing things up at the line of scrimmage with their ability in the trenches on defense. And on the offensive side of the ball, it was, we hear you loud and clear, Malik Nabers.
Yeah.
You're getting the ball, and Tyrone Tracy is going to make your run defense look more like what it's looked like for a lot of this year.
Yep, I agree. So
that'll be what it is. Do you have a prediction for the game, Brian? I'm going Cowboys.
I'm picking the Cowboys to win this game. It might be very much like, depending if Drew Locke plays or we get DeVito.
Tommy Cutlets.
It's so funny. Last year we were doing the game, me and Eric Chiafalo were out in the the Miller Lite, the plaza there, doing the pregame show out there, and we were outside, and like there's just all these people standing around with DeVito jerseys on, and one of them had like a high school DeVito jersey on, and I'm like, and I'm kind of looking at it, and I say out loud, and it goes over the loudspeaker at the, you know, where we're standing, I go, I wonder if that's DeVito's family that's coming in for this game. And they all turned and looked and nodded their heads. And I'm like, all right, hey, welcome to Texas.
And then you
said,
Ruben,
guys,
turn the speaker down when we're on commercial. Yeah,
exactly. I'm saying, well, where's our cutlet sandwich that we were going to do here? But anyway, but yeah, this should be I'm picking Dallas in this game. And I think it very much will be maybe like the game that was played earlier in this year. You know, very well could be that. You know, that game where it's a 24-20 type of a game. I'll go with Dallas. I'll see if here's the Giants haven't scored a lot of points. If DeVito starts, probably not going to get 20. But if Drew Locke plays, that could be a little bit more scoring going on there.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with this one. I'm going to go Dallas. I'm going to go Dallas 24. The Giants 16.
Oh, look at that. We have the same score. That's what I'm going with, too. I'm going Cowboys 24, Giants 16. I do think that you're right. Drew Locke would make things more challenging on the Cowboys.
He would make things a lot more challenging, yeah.
He's somebody who I feel like Drew Locke is going to – he's more likely to potentially give you an opportunity to take the ball away. But Drew Locke is also going to potentially hurt you more. He's a fearless quarterback. He'll throw it.
He will throw it, yeah.
But I do think that this is somewhere – Dallas at least has found a – sustainable rhythm that I feel like they can settle into.
Gotta win a home game, right? Gotta win a home game.
A lot of this season, it's felt like Dallas hasn't had a comfort play, or they haven't had anything that they just like, hey, this is reliable. We can settle into this. I think they're finding there's some things they can reliably settle into on defense. There's some things. You know, Dowdle, it seems like they're getting comfortable kind of settling into, hey, Rico can handle a couple carries in a row here and set things up for us. It feels like Cooper Rush was as comfortable as he was all season. I'll tell you, I think he made more checks at the line in this game against Washington than he made the first 2 weeks combined. And I think that what you see here is, you know, he had a couple nice throws to, he had one to CD. I think he had one to, Schoonmaker or Tolbert. I can't remember. That was another one where you saw, okay, that's a little bit of anticipation. That looks like, you know, he's,
CD came back for the ball in that crossing route.
That's thin margins there. That throw but I think that you found some stuff that you feel like, you know, when things aren't going your way, teams like to have stuff that they can just, hey, let's go to Old Faithful. Let's play the hits. Let's get into a rhythm here. Dallas for years in Dak's early years, it used to be that play action boot. All right, let's get Dak on the play action boot, get him a soft toss to the tight end, comfort throw. Let's get a rhythm going here. They finally feel like they have rhythm plays that they can settle into on both sides of the ball. And so I think that they'll be able to lean on some of that stuff when they're playing really bad teams like the Giants. So I got Cowboys 24-16 as well. You are listening to the Love of the Star podcast. The Love of the Star is an Odyssey podcast. You can find it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Brian, it is now time for the Dean Julia Love the Star mailbag, where we turn things over to our dear sweet listeners for their thoughts, their comments, their questions, talk about the things they want to talk about. And we're going to lead off here with a question from DJ. How has Marist Liufau been this season? I don't hear many people talk about him, but it seems like he's been steady all season. I don't know about you, Brian. I felt like early on in the season, Liufau had some struggles. I think he's he's one of these guys who, since the bye week, has settled into a lot of what Zimmer wants them to do. And when you talk about, I know you mentioned the next gen stat metrics. If you want to talk about the biggest gap that really exists in terms of when they're on the field and off the field in rushing efficiency, Dallas gives up about a yard per carry more when Marist Liufau is off the field than when he's on it. And it's a pretty substantial sample size. So I think Liufau, you're seeing, he always plays with the hair on fire, motor, the literally, play style. The motor, the play style, that's all really positive with him. I think it's starting to click for him. The normal rookie growing pains, but I think you're starting to see him when we talk about those comfort plays and those things you can settle into. I think Marist Liufau is one of those guys who feels like he's settling in.
I think you completely nailed the guy. Yeah, I think when you watch him play, there's stuff he plays in that they've got him involved in the base package stuff. They use him when you get overshown generally on a blitz. So they use overshown on the outside as an edge. So he's getting an opportunity. I think he's, you know, we were talking on 105.3 The Fan today on G-Bag Nation. We get a chance to talk to Eric Kendricks every Thursday. Today he moved up for us since the game. But he talked about Liufau and what, as a young player, what he's been able to do. And the film has shown a guy that, you're right, I think initially he really wasn't totally sure what he needed to do or where he needed to be. There's a much better feel for that right now. That Philadelphia game, I think, gave him a lot of confidence that he could play in this league, and he's starting to do that.
Next question here from Space Cowboy. Brian, you said you're 30 players deep now. I'm just over a dozen now at this point. Space Cowboy wants to know picks 1 through 10. Let's say you end up picks 1 through 10, picks 11 through 20 and picks 21 through 32. What positions are you looking at as like sweet spots in those areas? So I think for me, like, one of the things I do feel confident about 1 through 10, there's some really good receivers near the top here.
I agree with that.
Burden, McMillan, Tetero, McMillan, Luther Burden from Missouri, Travis Hunter from Colorado, if you want to play him there. I think the 11 through 20, I'm going to defer to you on the back end of this, because you've seen more guys at this point than I, but the sense I get is 11 through 20, that might be some more of your D-line guys.
Defensive tackles.
Tackle, maybe some of these guys.
Yeah, this is a defensive tackle. I mean, there's a couple of, like I say, the edges. James Pierce from Tennessee is a guy that people like a lot. Abdul Carter is a name. He's probably more in the upper part of the draft, in my opinion. Yeah. I kind of feel like, though, that if you're starting to talk about these defensive tackles, The one that seems to be the highest of everybody is the Mason Graham from Michigan. But he's got a sidekick, the Kenneth Grant, that plays next to him.
He's good, probably, too.
he's probably, and I'll say this though, these Michigan kids are, it's a different scheme. It's Wink Martindale. He used to be in the league. We saw Wink with the Ravens for a long time. The Giants.
Zero blitz.
Zero blitz, just attack up field. These Michigan players are in a completely different scheme now than they were with the previous regime. So I would say that I really like these defensive tackles. Then I start to think about these offensive tackles. We'll see what happens with, you know, we'll see what happens with. I got to do this. I got to look at this Josh Simmons from Ohio State.
There's people
that I'm talking to. Vach Lombardi and I did a show just before we did our show here tonight. Vach and I were talking about, he had seen Jason Simmons. He's the next player I need to look at. We need to find out where Will Campbell, the LSU tackle, is. We need to find out where Kelvin Banks, the Texas left tackle, do people think he's going to be a guard? And then we need to figure out about Cameron Williams, the right tackle. I will say this. I do not think the current offensive tackle group that we're looking at right now is as good as the group that was last year. It's not even really close where we're at. You know, there's a potential of a couple of guys moving to guard. We'll see how that plays out. But I think you're kind of looking at offensive tackles, edge. I really do like this kid, Revell, from East Carolina.
Yeah, Siobhan Revell.
Siobhan Revell. He hurt his ACL in practice very early in September. And Dan Cooper, who's the Cowboys surgeon, team doctor, did the surgery on him. So you know he's as good as gold, because Dan Cooper's one of the best in the business. You know, we'll see with the kid coming back. But ideal, I think if he had a healthy knee, he would be maybe the best corner in this draft. And I'm including that over maybe Travis Hunter. I've seen Travis Hunter struggle against McMillan from Arizona, if you go back and watch last year's games. And then go back and watch, there's a kid at Stanford that's Ayoar Manor, I think is how you say. Ayoar Manor. But he struggled against him. He's a kid from Stanford. Like last year, he lit Sanders up. And, you know, he's had some. So there's games where you can watch him play corner.
Travis Hunter, yeah.
Yeah, Hunter. There's games you can watch Travis Hunter play corner, and he plays very high level. And you can watch other games where he gets lit up. Like I say, McMillan got him, and the Stanford corner got him as well last year. And this year, some quality work. So these wide receivers, you know, probably up a little higher. Linemen, defensive tackles in that next tier, and some of the edges and things like that as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you mentioned the offensive tackles there, I think consistently people have thrown out as the top tackles in this draft. Throughout the summer, it's been Will Campbell from LSU and Kelvin Banks from Texas. I have heard a lot of chatter in personnel circles already that it sounds like a lot of people think both of them are guards. And so,
yeah, that's kind of, you know, maybe Will Campbell's LSU, a little shorter arm guy. Banks kind of in the same realm. Cameron Williams from Texas is 6'5", 330. He is long. His hands are good. His feet move well. He doesn't always play like a 330-pound guy, the physicality. You know, so there are going to be – I just have a feeling that these tackles, you're right. I think a couple of them are going to be moved to guard, and then we'll see what happens with the rest of the crew. But like I said, Vach Lombardi, who I do work with on the We're Doing All Right podcast, he was telling me that this Josh Simmons, Ohio State, might be the best tackle in the draft.
We got some Simmons tape for you there in the drive, Brian, so you can go check him out. There you go.
I will do that.
All right. That does it for us here today on the Love the Star podcast. We appreciate you guys so much. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We will be out at AT&T Stadium for Cowboys versus Giants. So we'll have some post-game reaction for you guys that we'll post Friday morning when you're doing your Black Friday shopping and everything else. But we appreciate you guys very much for hanging with us, and we'll continue to bring you the updates through the wins, the losses, the draft, everything else. For Brian Broaddus, I'm Bobby Belt. We'll talk to you guys again later.